Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Mind Talk podcast with myself, Edwin. On this episode, we have a guest who comes from the world of tennis. She's played doubles tennis at the highest level. And she's managed to achieve winning a Grand Slam at Wimbledon 2018. And her name is Nicole Melica Martinez. Nicole, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Thank you for coming onto the podcast today. So, Nicole, I'd like to ask this question to all the guests that come onto the Mind Talk podcast. Talk to us about your early experience with sports.
Yeah, well, it basically started, my mom was even playing tennis when she was pregnant with me. So even before I was born. But I have an older sister that plays, and she's 5 years older than me. So just growing up, I was on a tennis court ever since I could walk.
Okay.
And she'd be playing and I'd be running around, you know, picking up the balls or playing with the tennis balls. Or, you know, and as I got older, I just always wanted to beat my big sister. Yeah. And that's sort of how it started. And then you just keep going and you play your first tournament. And things go from there.
How old were you when you first hit a tennis ball?
When I first hit a tennis ball, probably only a year old. I mean, I'm sure when I was walking on the tennis court, my parents probably gave me a racket. And if I could hold it, they were probably like just told me to swing it or something. But I don't remember. So I must have been too young.
And you said that you wanted to beat your sister when you were younger. Mm-hmm. At what point... When did it get to a point when you started to beat your sister and you were better than your sister?
Well, yeah, that's not a nice story for her. It's a good one for me. I was 11, she was 16, and we had to play in the finals of a tournament, and I won the first set, and she was actually injured with her shoulder, so she didn't play much after she stopped the match after the first set, but I think I killed her desire a little bit. you don't want to lose to your younger sister. But yeah, when I was 11, she was 16.
Yeah.
But she started playing after that again. Okay. So that's good.
But at that age, being your sister, who is a little bit older than you, did that give you confidence to think, oh, actually, I can like beat more people than just my sister?
Yeah, I think so, because actually I was struggling to beat some players in certain tournaments, and my sister would beat them and then I beat my sister.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, if my sister can beat them and I can beat my sister, then I can beat them too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it definitely gave me like a spark or a motivation to keep going and trying.
Yeah. So you come from a family where tennis is quite known. How supportive were your family when you were playing at that age?
Oh, super supportive. Over the weekends, my dad would take me to tournaments, or my mom. I mean, it just depended who needed to work. But yeah, they always supported me and gave me what I needed. And, you know, they could see that I was asking for it, that I really wanted to do it. And I think that's also important for kids, you know, not that the parents are pushing them, but that the kids are pushing the parents. And I think that's the sign when you see the ones that you they're going to be good, because they truly want it from themselves. It's not the parents forcing them.
Yeah. What are some of the sacrifices you did when you were younger? Because it's different type of sacrifices you do when you're older compared to when you're younger. What were the main things you did as a child growing up that you would, most of your friends would do, but you wouldn't do?
I would be playing a tournament over the weekend and I wouldn't go to my friend's birthday parties, you know, or, you know, my friends were getting together after school. It's like, sorry, I can't go. I have practice.
Yeah.
You know, those are the little things. And I think that sort of continues in life. You know, I've missed big events in life because of tournaments. So it starts in a smaller scale and goes to a bigger scale. But yeah, I don't think it really changes much. I also wanted to homeschool and not go to school. So I think that also is a very different life. It's whether it's a sacrifice or a blessing. I don't know. Maybe it's both.
Yeah. But was the homeschooling because you knew that would give you more time to practice?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Because if I was going to school from, you know, 7 till 3, then after school, you'd only get maybe a couple hours of playing time. So you'd maybe get 2 hours of tennis, an hour of fitness. Whereas if I homeschooled, you know, I could get a couple hours in the morning, a couple hours in the afternoon, still do my conditioning and then work my school around it. It was a much better schedule.
So have that mindset at quite a young age. Did you know at that point that you wanted to be a professional tennis player?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I basically begged my parents to allow me to homeschool, because that's the path that I wanted to go. A friend of mine was homeschooling, and she also wanted to play pro tennis. And then I convinced her parents to convince my parents to allow me to homeschool as
Yeah.
well. So yeah, my friend really helped me out. That was good.
Talk to us a little bit about how it works with coaching at a young age for a tennis player.
I think it can be different. Just depends on, I think, the parents' financial situation and stuff. For me, the first year that I homeschooled, I was maybe getting one private lesson a day, and then, rate arranging with the other players from the club or adults, to practice more, like kids around the area and stuff. So if kids can have maybe the money to pay a private coach, it depends how much they can afford. If it's a couple lessons a week, if it's several hours a day, each week. I went to a tennis academy where we were playing 5 hours a day, just in the academy, and then maybe tennis lessons or private lessons were an additional charge to that. But luckily, the tennis academy, the first one I went to, John Newcomb's in Texas, I had a full scholarship there.
Okay.
So I was mainly paying just the private lessons or like the tournaments that I had to go to, the entry fee and the food and the hotel and maybe the coaches that would bring you and stuff. So I think it depends like on your ranking and your financial situation. There's a whole spectrum that you can get to.
Okay. So let's fast forward a little bit. So you get to the age where most people decide they want to go to college. Or not. When you got to that point, did you know that your focus was going to be on tennis, or did you think about college?
I was thinking about college, but it was more because I was feeling a bit of pressure, that, am I good enough to go pro, or, Nikki, you should go to college. My dad actually wanted me to go to college, whereas my mom just wanted me to sort of do what I wanted. The coach I was working with at the time fully supported me trying to go pro, but then, all the college coaches are like, oh, it's a great path to go to college for a few years before turning pro. So I felt like I was being pulled in a couple different directions. And a little hack that I found was if I didn't take my SAT, I wasn't eligible to go for an official visit.
Okay.
So I kept putting off taking my SAT. And then I found another loophole that if you don't take your SAT and you're more than 6 months after graduating high school, you can go to college without having taken it. So I basically decided, I'm just not going to take it. And if I want to go to college after that, I can. And I wanted to take a year off. And then right before, I think my senior year of high school, they changed the rule that the graduates were only eligible without losing a year of eligibility. You could only take 6 months off, not a full year.
Yeah.
But I decided, I was like, I'm going to take the full year anyways, just to try and play. And then if I want to go to college after that, okay, I'll only be eligible to play for 3 years. But it was a risk I was willing to take. And then the Women's Tennis Association, they partnered up with a university that you could do online school
Yeah.
to get my degree. And then I was like, okay, that's a done deal. I get to play and study at the same time. So, and it was something that I sort of promised my parents I would finish it,
Yeah.
but something for myself. I wanted to complete my bachelor's degree, which I did. It took me 8 years,
Yeah.
but yeah, I wanted to play. I never had a desire to play
Yeah.
college tennis. I always wanted to turn pro and
Yeah.
just give myself a chance.
Talk to us a little bit about how it felt when you went pro, your first match, how you dealt with nerves, how you prepared for it.
Yeah, I in tennis, turning pro just technically means that you're accepting the prize money and you're not declaring your expenses or, trying to take the money towards your expenses. So I don't really even remember like that I had like a match as a pro versus an amateur. I know the tournament I did it at, but yeah, I think it's more that you just go on the court and you try and play the match. It's the same match like you played yesterday, the day before, the
Yeah.
tournament before. I don't really feel like the nerves were that different. The fact that maybe it's a higher level tournament or something, I think that plays a role. And I think that even plays a role today. My coach, he always tells me, he's like, why do you give importance to certain events versus others? Like you go on the court and it's just a tennis match. And I think
Yeah.
that's something that I'm even today still trying to work on, that like, yes, just because you're playing for more points or more prize money, or you know, it's a deeper round in a tournament, at
Yeah.
the end of the day, it's still a tennis match. So why should
Yeah.
the nerves be different?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about singles and doubles. So you focus now more on doubles. What made you come to that decision to do that?
It was a combination of a lot of things, to be honest. As I was traveling trying to play pro, I didn't have enough money to pay a coach, and let's start before that. I ended up getting sick. I had mono, and
Okay.
I was playing some tournaments, and I was getting very tired during singles. But in doubles, I was doing fine because you don't need as much endurance. So my doubles ranking was going up, and my singles ranking was kind of staying the same or even dropping a
Yeah.
bit. And then also didn't have a coach, and then because my doubles ranking was going up, I was getting into higher level events, and then those events maybe provided like free hotel as long as you were in the event, or free food and more prize money. So it was a little bit of follow the money. So
Yeah.
then, you know, getting into the bigger events and winning rounds, earning a bit more money. So then my doubles ranking kept going up, my singles ranking kept dropping, and then at a certain point, I basically needed to make a decision, which
Yeah.
route do I want to, you know, spend more money to try and chase my singles dream, or do I want to go with maybe something that I even could be better at,
Yeah.
in doubles? So I chose the doubles route.
Okay. And when you decided to do that, did you know what partners you were going to use, or did how does it work with that? Because I know it's in doubles, you sometimes see someone with a partner for years and then they move on to the next one. How was it for you at that time?
Yeah, I, you know, always you try and maybe set with a girl in the beginning. It's a, you know, you ask them for one tournament, or say, oh, you know, we're playing the same two or three tournaments in a row, so let's, you know, try and play together for those tournaments and see how it goes. And it's a little bit kind of like dating in the real world. You know, you just message each other and you say, hey, you know, you want to play this tournament together, yes or no? And if you are winning or you're doing well, you stick together. And if you're not winning, then you decide to look for someone else. And yeah, I've had a few long-term partnerships where I've played with someone for a year or a couple of years. And then I've had some where, you know, you play just a few tournaments and decide it's maybe not the right partner for you, so you go your separate ways. But yeah, it's not always easy. And always sometimes you need to try and see what's best. Maybe one partner has a good serve and can hit the ball very hard, whereas another girl maybe doesn't serve very well, but you know, she's always gonna make your opponents play and not give many mistakes. So then it's like, okay, which partner suits me better? You know, do I want someone with certain weapons? You know, someone better at the baseline, someone better at the net. There's a lot that goes into it.
Okay. So let's give a scenario. So let's say you're playing a match and you're playing really well, but your partner's playing terrible. Like what are the type of things that you would say to your partner to encourage them, to motivate them, to help them along the way?
Oh, I just tell him to get off the court. I'm just kidding. I would never do that. Step aside. Just like let me do the work. No. I mean, I think it's important to know your partner, what triggers them well. But most of the time, it's in my personality just to try and be very positive with them and to encourage them. Let's say they hit the right shot, but they miss it. I'll tell them, hey, it's the right shot. Keep going for it. You'll make it. And then maybe I'll tell them, you know, just a little reminder, like, oh, maybe just aim, you know, for a bigger part of the court, or, you know, something like that. So I just try and encourage them to, you know, continue to do the right thing, because if you do the right thing, then hopefully eventually it will start working. Because if they're your partner's probably already upset with themselves, so if you're going to get upset with them, it's probably not going to help them very more. Even though some people do work well that way, if you scold them, then maybe they actually pick it up and do better. But it's not really in my nature to do that.
How about when it's the other way around?
Yeah, I think same works for me, is that if I'm missing, or you know, I want to I like to be encouraged that maybe I'm doing the right thing, or if I'm doing the wrong thing, you know, I want to be told, hey, you know, you hit the ball there, maybe this is a better option.
Yeah.
You know, just a little bit of like guidance, but always in a positive, you know, constructive manner.
Okay, so when, let's say in your career, when you've had times when you've had like difficult periods, when you're losing back-to-back matches, what are the type of things that would help your confidence come back?
Yeah, because I've had some, I think my worst streak was like 8 matches in a row or something. And you know, everyone always says you can't think about it, but of course you're always thinking about it.
Yeah.
So I think the important thing just to remember is nothing lasts forever.
Yeah.
And that you just have to keep working. You know, if something, you can maybe look back and be like, okay, well, you know, we're losing the match because we're missing too many returns. So yeah, we need to go on the practice court and work on those returns and maybe play more practice matches and just try and find the confidence, at least on the practice court. Because for me, if I feel I can't do it on the practice court, then there's no way I'll do it in the match court, even though that's not necessarily true. You know, you see some players that, you know, their practices aren't great and then they know how to turn it on in matches. But I think it's just trying to keep a positive mindset and just, you know, next tournament, go out, fight for every point, do your best, and just try and do better what wasn't good the last time.
Yeah. So in doubles, mainly in the Grand Slams, you tend to get like partners come together that normally just focus on singles. Mm-hmm. How do you prepare when you face people like that? Because obviously when you're facing a doubles team, you kind of know what you need to prepare for, their strengths and weaknesses. How do you prepare in that situation?
Yeah, that can be tricky because there are many scenarios that happen. Either, you know, sometimes you'll play singles players that are clueless at doubles, and that's what you sort of hope for. But what often happens is you're playing the singles players that are playing the doubles, but a bit careless, and they're actually playing very well because what do they do well in singles? They serve well, they return well, they can rally well. And even though they're maybe not running doubles formations or, you know, calling certain plays, you know, they're going to do certain things at a very high quality.
Yeah.
So I think the most important is like with a doubles team, you know, you go and do your homework, you try and find out, okay, where are their serve tendencies, which side do they prefer to return on? You know, when they're rallying, do they stay at the baseline? Do they come into the net? Are they only rallying cross court? I think it's important to still try and see what their tendencies are and try and stick to your game to expose their weaknesses. And then just adjust as the match goes, because sometimes you plan for something and it's maybe not working, but in the match you see like, oh, you know, they're really struggling with the backhand return. So then you start serving more to their backhand or something. So yeah, you just adjust as you go.
Okay. In a match, have you ever experienced a mental block? And if you have, how have you overcome that?
Mental block. I wouldn't say a block. I would say more, you know, definitely you're maybe trying to figure out solutions in the match and certain things aren't working. I think I've definitely maybe had nerves in certain moments that have, you know, you feel like your arm getting tight or not swinging. But, you know, in some matches you do overcome it and some you don't. Some you just end up, you know, you're playing well and then you get a little tight and then you end up losing.
Yeah.
So I think to overcome that is to try and acknowledge when it's happening and to just focus on the task at hand. Because if you're focused on what you need to do, then it takes your mind away a bit from, you know, maybe the fact that you're nervous or what happened in that last point. You know, if you give yourself like, okay, you know, just try and forget about the next point. It's like, okay, we have to, you know, serve here. And then, you know, you try and focus on what to do, then your body can try and be productive at like what's next rather than focusing on what happened.
You're someone in your doubles career, you've reached the last stages of tournaments many, many times. What do you think is, apart from your ability, but what do you think mentally that you have that allows you to get to the last stages of tournament?
I think myself, the fact that I'm a bit stubborn, you know, my will to win has really helped me in many cases. But I think overall, I have a lot of positives in my game. I have a good serve. My return has improved a lot. I can rally from the baseline. I'm good at the net. I feel like you can put me on different parts of the court and I can succeed. Also, depending on what type of partner I'm playing with. But I feel, especially in Grand Slams, you have a bit more time because you play the full format. You play deuces and ads rather than the deciding point in the WTA events. But I feel like it just gives you more time, a little more breathing room. And I'm definitely a thinker, sometimes an overthinker, but I think a lot on the court and I really try and like solve the puzzle that's going on. And I think that's helped me in several Grand Slam matches in my career that maybe things weren't going well. And because of that bit of extra time or those few more points that you could play, I was able to maybe come up with a solution and figure it out.
Okay. Talk to us a little bit about the differences between mixed doubles and doubles.
Mm-hmm. Mixed doubles is so much fun, especially if you have a fun partner and if you're playing well. Yeah. The points are much, not always, but I feel like the points are shorter just because if the guy is serving well, you know, sometimes you don't get as many looks on the return. Yeah. And actually, sometimes it's funny. Sometimes the guy struggles to return the girl's serve rather than the guy's serve. But I mean, in true mixed, you know, the guy tries to pick on the girl. And I think it's you feel a sense of accomplishment when the guy hits it really hard at you and then you don't miss it, but maybe you hit it back or, you know, hit an even better shot.
Yeah.
And I think mixed is, it's also like a chess match, you know, you need to see, is the girl the weakness? If it is, you know, is the guy too much of a gentleman to pick on her, or does he, you know, just like, no, I want to win the match and he hits it really hard at her. Or, I don't know. It's fun.
But how do you deal with it mentally when, let's say, a guy is targeting you? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you move yourself from, like, focusing on what you need to achieve instead of, like, why is he targeting me?
Well, I think it's like in any match, you know, you put yourself on the court. But if, you know, if let's say I'm not good at the net and the guy is knows that and he's hitting it at me at the net, then what are my options? Either, you know, I have to do better and react and not miss, or I won't go to the net. You know, maybe I stay on the baseline. And you know, that's also the beauty of doubles is you don't have to stand where you don't want to. If you don't want to hit a volley, you can stay on the baseline. If you don't want to rally from the baseline, you can serve and volley or, you know, return and come in or something. I think it takes away, it hides your weaknesses a bit more. And I think you as a player need to identify that. And, you know, if they're exposing your weakness, then they're playing well. They're doing their job. So then you need to figure out, you know, how they cannot expose it.
So you've reached Grand Slam finals. You managed to achieve one of your goals. Talk to us about your feeling when you did manage to win a Wimbledon title in 2018.
Oh, that was definitely the moment of my career, and it's something I dream of happening again, and I'm working towards. But yeah, that day I was so nervous before the final. You know, we had to play Jamie Murray and Azarenka, and even though we were the seeded team, everyone was putting them as favorites, which, I mean, Vika being former number one in singles and Jamie Murray having won, I don't know how many Grand Slams and doubles and mix that he has, fair enough to put them as the favorites. And I actually think putting them as the favorites took a little pressure off of us. And I was a little lucky, maybe because I'm superstitious, but we were walking onto the court and every day we sat to the right of the chair. Azarenka and Murray, they walked on the court first before us. And they were going to go to those benches, but then I looked at the towels, and the towels on those benches had our names on them. And I was like, no, 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 those are our seats. You have to go sit over there. And I wanted so badly to sit on the same side. And it just happened to work out that way. So to start the match, they gave me a nice settled feeling.
And I can imagine that day, the support must have been more towards them because obviously Jamie Murray's in his home country. How do you mentally like get over it when you know the crowd are for the opponent?
Well, luckily at Wimbledon, they're very neutral and they were very respectful both ways. They were obviously cheering a bit more for them, but it wasn't extreme. It wasn't like, you know, maybe in a football match where Real Madrid versus Barcelona and Real Madrid. No, it was a very, very tame and calm, and it was a nice atmosphere. And I think I had a good amount of people there supporting me too. So, yeah, it was nice. But when people are against you, I've been in that situation before. I think you just need to, you know, keep your head down and focus on the ball. And and when you do win a point, know that, you know, you have your box or your team there that's cheering for you, and you don't need the whole crowd to cheer for you. You basically need yourself and your coach. And, you know, if you have a few more people, then that's great.
On season one of the Mind Talk podcast, I had Marcus Daniel on, who spoke about high impact athletes. So talk to us about what that means for you, because I know you're part of it. Discuss what it means to you.
Yeah, I was one of Marcus's first athletes, and I think he's doing a great job with that. I think it's a great platform and a great tool. I try and donate when I can, especially to animals, just because you know, animals can't really speak up for themselves. They don't have a voice. But in this sport, I think just as athletes overall, we're very privileged that we can travel the world, and depending on, you know, the level of the athlete, but most of us are making good money. So I think it's important to give back, at least when we can.
Brilliant. What's next for you?
Well, I'm going to Rome. So next for me is Rome, and I'm taking I unfortunately had a little injury in Madrid last week, so I'm taking a few days off to recover. So also good for my mental health, you know. We're in Venice right now. I'm enjoying seeing a place I've always wanted to go to, but maybe that tennis wouldn't bring me to. So just trying to explore the city and enjoy just, you know, I don't know how much traveling I'll be able to do someday after we're done playing. And maybe it's a blessing in disguise, you know, to lose, but to see some beautiful places.
Yeah. Like you mentioned it to me before we came on that you were in Venice on the boat. And I was just thinking, oh, I wish I was dead, like doing that right now instead of this cold country.
Yeah, but it's bad weather today. It's raining the whole day. Yes. Yeah, so, okay. But we bought an umbrella and we're walking the streets, and I'll probably have to take a different pair of shoes now when we go out because my shoes are soaked from all the puddles.
Dear. Nicole, this has been a pleasure. It's been a fantastic episode. You've dropped some interesting facts that I'm sure that will help some of the people listening who are craving to be tennis players. So thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Great. For those who are listening for the first time, welcome aboard. For those who are regular listeners, welcome back. And there will be more episodes coming soon. Until next time, peace.